African food. You hear that expression all the time, yet it's like saying European food. It doesn't exist. Each African country is a world and a cuisine unto itself. One vivid example is Senegal. This is West Africa, and the country that juts out into the Atlantic. For chef and activist Pierre Tcham, it's his homeland. His first book paid tribute to his roots, his family's food. Now he's gone to his country's culinary roots and their stories in his latest book, Senegal, Modern Senegalese Recipes from the Source to the Bowl. Pierre, it's great to have you back again.
It's great to be here, Lynn.
Pierre, if we've never seen Senegal, set the scene for us. What are the flavors, the ingredients, the aromas?
Well, you have to expect lots of seafood. Senegal, as you said, it is the most western country in Africa. It's like in the coast of the Atlantic Ocean. It's surrounding us pretty much. The city where I grew up is a peninsula. So lots of seafood. You have to expect the smells of the ocean. You have to also expect the funky smell of fermentation. That's something that's big in our cuisine. We tend to ferment conch. We tend to smoke. You have smoking as well, and the charge of grilling. You have a lot of fruitiness in our cuisine. You know, the spices of Scotch bonnet are coming up quite a lot in our cuisine as well. The healthy aspect that many people don't realize is also very, very, very much part of our cuisine. Freshness, fresh vegetables, lots of leafy greens are also part of our cuisine. Rice, that's the most common grain, but you also have other grains like fonio, millet, sorghum that comes more in the countryside when you go down south Senegal. And the climate also influences the cuisine. Senegal is south of the Sahara Desert, so you have a semi-desertic country in the north. And further you go south, you have more like a tropical, lush area. And both cuisines are different. You know, the south has more like the okra, you know, coconut comes out in the menu.
Uh-huh. So when you go home to Senegal, what is the first thing you want to eat?
Cheboujan.
Say that again.
Cheboujan.
Cheboujan.
That's anyone who's been to Senegal, try cheboujan. That's the national dish. That's the dish you would expect to see pretty much on a daily basis for lunch. It's a very complex dish that the translation of the name doesn't really do it justice. It's a word in Wolof that translates fish and rice. But cheboujan is so much more than that. It's our paella in a way. You know, it's rice that's cooked in a broth, a tomato broth. The broth has been enriched with the fish. The fish is cooked in that broth with the tomato and vegetables. And remember I mentioned the funky agent as well.
We have, oh, yes, the fermentation.
Fermented conch. You have dried fish. All that is in the broth with the vegetables. The vegetables could be as diverse as eggplants, yuca, sweet potatoes, okra, and it's a very rich broth. And then once all those are cooked, they're scooped out and put on the side, and then the rice is cooked inside the broth, and that color is red because of the rich tomato broth. So the rice comes out red, and the most important thing in the cheboujan for me is the crust at the bottom of the pot. Once you finish cooking the cheboujan, there's the rice. Forming a crust, like I think some people call it Socorat, but we call it Khogne, and that brings another texture when you eat the rice and you have that crunchiness of the crust. And the fish, again, I forgot to mention that fish is stuffed with a mixture that we call ruff, and that mixture is made out of parsley and Scotch bonnet and scallions and garlic, and all pounded together and stuffed the fish in the, you know, you slit on the fish, in the flesh of the fish, and you stuff that mixture. And it, so it has these surprising bites of heat that comes once in a while as you eat it, and it just blends wonderfully.
It sounds like flavor upon flavor upon flavor.
Indeed.
And shadings. And
yes.
Is there the other end of the spectrum in Senegalese food of a very simple, you know, very direct flavors as well?
Oh, yes, yes. Actually, that reminds me of one dish from the south. It's very simple. We call it yassa. And yassa has only really three ingredients. It's lots of onions, that have been cooked slowly with lime juice and grilled either fish or chicken. The chicken and or the fish has been marinated in that same lime flavor, lime and garlic and thyme, and then marinated for some time, overnight ideally, if it's meat. And then you grill it on a wood burning stove. So you have the char and the smell of the wood that just imparts in the meat or the fish, and you serve it over rice. The onions, remember, have been cooked so slowly, and it has the lime, but it's cooking so slowly that it tends to caramelize. So it has a sweetness that comes out. So you have lots of onion that makes the sauce of this dish over the chicken and simple rice. So it's like fruity flavor from the lime, and the sweetness of the onion, and the char from the burning wood burning grill. Comfort food, simple. Another dish too is made out of peanut sauce, you know, cooked slowly. And most of the time it's lamb. That's my favorite. The lamb is cooked slowly in that peanut sauce. So you have like this rich and thick peanut sauce. It comes on the side with vegetables. And also you can serve it again over grains like millet, fonio, or rice.
This sounds so delicious. But one thing you've mentioned a couple of times now, fonio.
Mm.
Tell me about fonio.
Well, fonio is an ancient grain. Actually, it's a grain that's been cultivated for thousands of years in Africa, and it's suspected to be the oldest cultivated grain in Africa.
Huh.
It's surprising that more people don't know about it yet. But back in the days, before colonial times, fonio was widespread. As a matter of fact, it's been found, fonio, by archaeologists in burial ground in ancient Egypt.
Oh,
to tell you how important that grain was in Mali, the country that borders Senegal, they have a mythology, the Bambara people in their mythology, fonio is the seed of the universe. And, you know, the whole universe evolved from fonio. Just to these little stories to tell you how important fonio has been in our culture. It's this tiny little grain that looks like sand. It's gluten-free. It's rich in protein. It's for me, the most important part is delicious. It's very versatile. I make so many different recipes out of fonio. I use it to substitute any grains, actually, or I make a salad out of it with like lots of citrus and herbs like parsley, and I use nuts in it, and I use sometimes fruits like mangoes and cucumber and tomatoes. I make with flour, I make some breads with it. You can have some great gluten-free pastries with it as well. So again, that's a grain that's drought-resistant. That's what another important aspect of fonio is, drought-resistant. It grows in the harshest conditions, you know, again, Senegal is semi-desertic. So you see fonio could be growing in this almost sandy ground. It matures in 2 months, one of the fastest maturing grain. In two months, you can have like a harvest of fonio. And again, you should try it. It's delicious grain.
I noticed from the recipes, it cooks in like 15 or 20 minutes also.
Yes, exactly. And there's actually a Bambara saying, fonio never embarrasses the cook. So that's to tell you how it's so easy to cook. You one cup of fonio, one cup of water, and you have your recipe down. That's all you need, the same amount of fonio and water.
In a conversation that we had when we were talking about your first book several years ago, you mentioned something that was very interesting to me. You said Africa in its native plants and the foods that were traditional before foreigners came could feed itself so well, but that people have turned away from it. And it's fonio, it sounds like fonio is one of the keys to that.
Absolutely. Fonio is one of the keys to that. And that's why I'm championing it and I'm pushing it. And I'm getting a positive echo from everyone who tries it. Indeed, Africa has been feeding itself before colonial times. And it's the continent that has the most amount of arable land. I mean, it's one of the most fertile land to begin with. The tragedy of colonialism is that we were led to believe, you know, that everything that comes from the West was better. And we were brainwashed this way, that we we looked down at what we had.
Mm-hmm.
The Senegal is a very good example. You know, Fonio, to have Fonio in Senegal, you have to go in the countryside. You would have difficulties finding restaurants in Dakar, in the city, that sells Fonio because, you know, it's not Western enough, you know. We prefer to have our baguette. We prefer to have our baguette that's made out of wheat, you know. Every street corner of Dakar, or of Senegal for that matter, sell the best baguette. I mean, great baguette, just like in Paris, you know, because, you know, we were looking, this was what we were looking up to, you know. But our own products, such as Fonio, or even broken rice, the rice that we use to make the Chebujan national dish.
Yes.
So that broken rice, you know how we got to be using broken rice is because that broken rice was imported to Senegal from Indochina at the time, which was became Vietnam. Indochina was part of the French colonial empire. And the French brought this broken rice, which really was the overprocessed rice that the Vietnamese would just throw away after they process the rice and they keep the grains, the leftovers.
Right.
The French would send it to Senegal because they wanted our farmers to be just busy growing peanuts at the time. That was a cash crop for the French industries to make peanut oil. So the broken rice became the grain that was promoted by the colonials, and the Senegalese embraced it like we embrace many things. And we make great things with that broken rice. We make this great dish with it. But we look down at our own type of rice because we do have a type of rice in the south of Senegal, which is where my family is originally from, in Casamance. There's a typical rice, it's called Oriza Glaberima. That's a different kind of rice than the one that comes from Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the rice that was, funny enough, was exported from Senegal and Sierra Leone and Guinea to the Americas during the slave trade. So this rice came from Senegal. The rice we looked down upon came from Senegal and went to the Americas and became an important crop. You know, in the Carolinas, it was so important that it was nicknamed the Carolina Gold. You see the irony?
That was in the 1700s and 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, the single most expensive rice in the United States, and foreign countries paid huge amounts of money to get their hands on it. The irony of that is amazing.
indeed. It's really amazing that this great rice that, again, you said foreign countries paid tons of money for that, in Senegal, we still are not consuming it. It's just in the south. It's limited. Its production is just limited in the south. It's called the Jola rice. And the Jola are consuming it because it has an important value spiritually. They use it for their sacred rituals. And so they keep using it. They keep consuming it. But the north, we still, 50 years after independence, we're still importing rice from, you know, Southeast Asia. You know, there's apparently some changes. The government is trying to promote local growing rice, but there's still so much work to be done. It's more like a mentality change than just, you know, it's political, of course, but it's mentality. People have to start really realizing how we have such great products and we have to really consume them.
Pierre, there's something, a word that you use a lot in the book, terenga.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the word you say in the title, the subtitle of the book is From the Source to the Bowl, not the plate. Mm-hmm. So first of all, let's start with the bowl. What is the significance of the bowl in Senegal?
Well, the bowl is the vessel in which we eat. First of all, we eat around the bowl in Senegal, or in most of Africa for that matter. The bowl symbolizes unity. We eat together. Eating is something that's not done in a separate way. In Senegal, you always stop everything when it's mealtime and everyone gets together. And the bowl is that magnet that unifies the family, that brings friends and family together. And again, you mentioned teranga. Teranga is the word that symbolizes Senegal the best, I think. You know, teranga is a Wolof word that would translate hospitality, but it's not the right way to translate teranga. Teranga is much more than just hospitality. It's a value, it's the most important value in our, if there's a set of values in Senegal, teranga would be the most important one. It's the way you treat the guest. It's the way you treat the other, you know, the one who is not you. That person becomes the one you have to offer teranga. You have to treat him with so much respect. You have to offer him what you have. You have to invite him to sit around your bowl. There's always room for the other around your bowl. And why? Because we believe that the other is bringing blessings. So when you share your bowl will always be plentiful. This is the Senegalese, a deep-rooted Senegalese belief. We believe that there's always more. You will never lack by sharing. Actually, when you share, you guarantee yourself that tomorrow there's going to be more food in your bowl, and so on and so forth. So this is a country that values the wealth of a person not by how much he has, but by how much he shares, by how much he gives. That's what I would say to summarize what teranga means. Just not one word that describes it, but teranga is what Senegal is. It's something that's really unique to my country, and I'm not saying that because I'm Senegalese. It's just this value has been encrusted in us that we have to treat the other as the most important person in the world.
What a difference that would make to the world.
Indeed.
Pierre, thank you. This has been a pleasure.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, Lynn.
Pierre Cham is the author of Senegal, Modern Senegalese Recipes from the Source to the Bowl. Now, you can find more information on Senegal and his recipe for mango fonio salad on the website splendidtable.org.